Is moon madness starting to affect the population? Next on Principles and Policies. Welcome to today's edition of Principles and Policies. I'm your host, Barry Sheets, the Executive Director of the Institute for Principled Policy. And along with me today is our co-host, the Vice Chairman of the Institute, my fellow analyst and very good friend, Chuck Michaels.
Very good to be back with you, Barry. Very good to have the opportunity to talk with you and discuss some issues on the air. And I had to take note, Moon Madness has another name. Do you know what it is?
No, I don't.
The term lunacy.
Lunacy.
Lunacy actually comes from the idea that strange things happen near a full moon. And, of course, since an eclipse involves a completely obscured moon, it's not quite the same, but it seems to be leading up to some true lunacy. There was a statistical study done once about seemingly breakouts of insanity or schizophrenia or all kinds of different mental illnesses, and it supposedly seems to peak around a full moon. So hence the term lunacy, moon madness. And we do seem to have some madness,
right,
surrounding this.
Right, because as all of our listeners know, on Monday the 21st, there is going to be an event that doesn't happen very often. I think maybe, once in every 18 years or something of that nature?
It's a rare event. Now, they happen all the time around the world, but in this part of the world, we only get them every once in a while. And the closest thing I've been to a total event was in Michigan when we got about a three-quarter. When I lived there in the mid-90s. So
right. Now what we're talking about is the solar eclipse where the moon gets between the Earth and the sun in just such a way that because of the distances between the two. Now, I was reading some information from Hugh Ross, who's not my favorite creationist, but basically that it's interesting because the distance between the sun and the moon, the sun is 400 times farther away from the moon,
yep,
and it's also 400 times larger than the moon, so that when these things line up and you're looking at it from the Earth, then the moon's shape fits almost perfectly around the sun to create that total eclipse, where all you see is the corona of the sun around the shadow of the moon.
Yep.
So you have this big dark spot, the size of the sun, or appearingly the size of the sun, with the corona, and that's the total eclipse. Now, I know, Chuck, for folks in our listening area, you're not going to see the total eclipse because the flight path for it goes from Oregon down through South Carolina, and I took a look at NASA's maps the other day, and I kind of looked for my location, and it basically said that we're going to get about 89%
total. Yeah, we get
We'll get a partial, but it's going to be a pretty nice partial. I mean, that's 89% of the total eclipse isn't bad, and accordingly, I think we're supposed to be looking at it somewhere between 12:45 in the afternoon and 4 o'clock in the afternoon, from the earliest phases of the moon starting to cross the path of the sun's face to where it completely is out of it. So,
yeah,
but the full part of it's only going to last about 3 minutes, the moon is exactly centered in front of the sun, so that if you're sitting in Nebraska or Kansas, you're going to be able to see the total eclipse.
A very close friend of mine lives in Riverton, Wyoming. He is right smack in the middle of the totality. He keeps telling me to come, and I keep telling him I can't. I'd love to go out. This will be, at 89%, this will be the closest to a totality I've ever been. Before, I'd seen him in the 70s. And I can tell you, from sitting through the last one, that was about 75% total, it's eerie. You go outside, first of all, don't go outside without sunglasses on, because your eyes, you need polarized lens sunglasses if you go outside, because your eyes dilate to let more light in. The problem is that the amount of radiation is about the same. So you need to be very careful about the health of your eyes.
Right, because your brain is being tricked into letting your natural defenses.
That's right. Walmart is selling special eclipse glasses. So go buy a pair of eclipse glasses at Walmart. I know places around here, for instance, we have a little museum in Newark. It's called The Works. The Works has glasses for, a buck. or something like really cheap. And the same with Walmart. And my daughter, and I'm going to put in a good word for my daughter here because it is the, we're right before. My daughter is the office director of the Licking County Historical Society. And
congratulations.
Monday, they have a golf outing at the Mound Builders Country Club. So guess what? You can still sign up. Contact the Licking County Historical Society and help raise money for the Historical Society. And you can also be out during the middle of the close to totality. Now, let me tell you, at 80-some-odd percent, it's going to be dark, folks, because, I've sat through one of these. At 75%, you go outside, and it's like early evening. At that rate, at 89%, it's going to be even darker. And it's odd because you go outside and the animals, I live out in the country, we hear animals all the time. I got donkeys braying, I've got dogs barking, I got cats fighting. Well, when I lived in Michigan, you went outside during a near totality and the animals are all very still. Dogs don't bark. Things aren't moving around. It's a very eerie feeling. And it's because they're confused. I mean, they're on an internal clock, and the internal clock says it should be around noon, and it feels like it's 6 p.m. or 7 p.m. or 8 p.m., whatever. So they get kind of wigged out and head for their hidey holes. And I'm just here to tell you that even in the city, it feels strange during even a partial.
Oh, sure. Absolutely. Well, I'm kind of looking forward to it because the last time one came around, my oldest had just been born. So, you know, he's now 18. So it's my kids. This will be the first one that they'll get to experience. Now, hopefully they'll get to experience a number of more of them in their lifetimes. I might only get to see one or two more. So I'm going to take advantage of it because I'm not like people who can either travel to Wyoming or travel all over the face of the planet to go chase these eclipse events. It's funny because, we frequent our local library quite a bit. I'm going to do a little plug here. I'm actually reading a book right now, no coincidence here, a book by a gentleman by the name of David Barron. It's called American Eclipse, A Nation's Epic Race to Catch the Shadow of the Moon and Win the Glory of the World. And it's basically talking about how internationally and here in America in the 19th century, the push was on to document a full total solar eclipse. And, you know, how these everybody from Alexander Graham Bell to Thomas Edison to James Watson were all involved in trying to bring America to be the preeminence in the scientific community in relation to viewing, understanding, and reporting on a total solar eclipse. It's a good book, but again, this is something that I'm hoping that we'll have a situation where I get to see a few more of these in my lifetime. It would be nice, but I'm hoping that my kids get to start theirs on Monday and then can go on and further their eclipse viewing.
If you're willing to pay the money and travel, and I've traveled in amateur astronomy circles and people would take cruises and things that went down into the Indian Ocean, you can see them more often. That's the whole point. You have to have the money and the time to be able to travel, to be able to see these things. So they do happen more often. They're happening all the time. And if you watch the astronomy magazines or the astronomy websites, you can find out about them. But we tend to get kind of, especially in the United States, wrapped up in our own stuff. And we, you know, if it's happening in the Maldives or someplace, we don't hear about it unless we have specialty knowledge. So
that's true. Well, that we now have the internet, which can give us a whole lot kind of knowledge.
Yeah.
And you know, Chuck, I said here that I might get to see one or two more in my lifetime, and hopefully this will be the start of a number of viewings of solar eclipse for my kids. But it probably won't be, according to some people, because, well, there's a faction out there in the web land that believes that we're on the cusp of ending all life as we know it on Earth, and it's probably going to happen not too long after the solar eclipse.
33 days.
Oh, okay. Is that all the time we've got left?
That's the latest incarnation of this particular legend is that we have 33 days after the eclipse to live.
Okay. Wow. Okay, folks. Go go ahead and get your bucket list ready. While you're sitting there in the shadow of the eclipse, maybe you should write your bucket list down because, well, if you've only got 33 days after the eclipse, I know there's an awful lot of things I want to try to get done, so including mowing my yard.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, so get all
so,
your...
So why don't you fill us in, because you were the one who alerted me to this little corner of the webverse, and I find it to be quite, well, I wouldn't say fascinating, let's just say entertaining.
There have been a number of these things, but the latest one is, and I brought it up this morning, I was kind of surprised that neither you nor Mike O'Reilly at WLRY had heard of this, and that is the rogue planet Nibiru. N-I-B-I-R-U. Nibiru is going to kill us all around in October of this year, early October 2017. Gee, I hope not, because I got a grandchild that's supposed to be born somewhere around the 18th. So, you know, I'd really kind of like to see that through. So I'm kind of hoping that Nibiru doesn't come. Well, Nibiru, if you do a Google search, if you want to be entertained, do a Google search on Nibiru, and again, N-I-B-I-R-U. And also, or if you really, 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 really want to be entertained, do a search on YouTube, because you can find some of the strangest attempts to make things look like, you know, people have seen these things. I have seen holograms. I've seen people who see optical illusions in the clouds, who are convinced that it's an appellation of Nibiru and this planet that we can't see and yet gives us all this trouble. There have been other ones. Yep. Nemesis is one I remember. Tyche. Some of these other Planet X. Planet X and Nibiru right now are supposedly the same thing. Planet X was one that was going to hit us, so I don't know, 3 or 4 years ago. And listen, I have people I respect a lot and who I like a lot who were telling me, don't worry about it because Planet X is coming to pull the Earth apart and it's going to kill us all. And I'm laughing. I'm like, come on, seriously.
Well, I just went over to our source for all things completely factual, Wikipedia, and I want to read to you just a little brief snippet of what Wikipedia has to say about the Nibiru Cataclysm.
The Nibiru Cataclysm.
Yes, it's a doomsday scenario. The Nibiru Cataclysm is a supposed disastrous encounter between the Earth and a large planetary object, either a collision or a near miss, which certain groups believe will take place in the early 21st century. Believers in this doomsday event usually refer to this object as Planet X, or Nibiru. The idea that a planet-sized object will collide with or closely pass by Earth in the near future is not supported by any scientific evidence and has been rejected by astronomers and planetary scientists as pseudoscience and an internet hoax. Now, I want to go on, and there's one other paragraph in that, and I think this really kind of gives you the whole feel of where this came from. The idea was first put forth in 1995 by Nancy Leader, founder of the website Zeta Talk.
Yeah.
Leader describes herself as a contactee with the ability to receive messages from extraterrestrials from the Zeta Reticuli star system through an implant in her brain. She states that she was chosen to warn mankind that the object would sweep through the inner solar system in May 2003, although that date was later postponed. I guess maybe there was a little bit of a radiation interference in the transfer from Zeta Reticuli to her brain, so she missed the date. And would cause the Earth to undergo a physical pole shift that would destroy most of humanity. Now, I wonder if Nancy Leader ever read a book called The Hab Theory by Alan Eckert. Now, most people know Eckert because he wrote books on the opening of America and the founding, the Frontiersman. He had a whole series on that. He's a great writer, okay? A fantastic writer. But he dabbled in science fiction, too, and he wrote one called The Hab Theory, and I happened to read it. And it was about this whole cataclysmic event where the Earth's magnetic poles invert. And then while they're inverting, it causes the planet to shift and turn and basically reorient its axis as well as the pole inversion. So I'm starting to see that maybe she was reading some of this science fiction.
Oh, could be. And, you know, it wouldn't be unheard of. It appears that the Earth's poles, the magnetic poles, have shifted from time to time.
Well, and they do. I mean, from time to time, and astronomers and scientists will tell you that yes, the magnetic polarity of the Earth shifts from time to time. And that's fine, but we don't have where, you know, we have an axis that's set at a particular tilt to the sun because of, you know, where we're positioned, gravity,
right,
the our elliptical
right.
orbit, and the moon's in influence. All that stuff would have to change in order to create where we're basically, where you are in North America now would now be the southern hemisphere, eastern side, because the planet flipped upside down.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
doesn't happen that way.
If you read some of the cataclysmic literature that was early on in kind of creationist circles, that's one of the arguments about there was talk that the Earth had flipped on its axis from time to time, and is supposedly corresponding with a magnetic flip. I think you can have a magnetic flip without having the Earth turn over on its axis.
I would hope so.
Yeah, because remember that our magnetism is caused by an iron core. That's one of the things that the Earth has. We have a molten iron core, and an iron core essentially leads to us having a magnetic field, and thank God for that magnetic field. I mean, literally, thank God. Get down on your knees every day and thank God for the magnetic field, because the magnetic field gives us phenomena like the northern lights, the southern lights, what we call, you know, an aurora borealis and the aurora australis. And why those are important things is because the magnetic field is capturing dangerous radiation particles that would kill us. And what it does is it deflects them. And when you see the northern lights, you're seeing those particles being deflected. This is why we get warnings if you, again, pay attention to astronomy magazines, and especially to websites. There are a number, NASA keeps a website, that tell us when we're being bombarded by an electronic storm and what the possibilities of a northern lights outbreak is. You know, and how far south you'll be able to see them. That is because at the poles, those particles are captured by the magnetic field all around us, and then they're released at the poles. At the magnetic poles and deflected. Now, here's, you know, I realize we have other things we want to talk about, but this is important stuff. This is important scientific stuff. We have a lot of talk out there about let's go to Mars. We need to colonize Mars. We need to have an ongoing colony there. Well, guess what Mars doesn't have? Mars does not have a molten iron core. Besides having 60% of our gravitational field, it also has almost no atmosphere because of this 6/10 of our gravitational field. All the gases escape out into space. But it also doesn't have a molten iron core. Well, no molten iron core means no magnetic field, and no magnetic field means that the surface is constantly bombarded with solar particles. The solar wind, you feel the full effect on the surface of Mars, which means that all the ionizing radiation that you're saved from on the Earth by the magnetic field around it, you are not saved from on Mars. So something would have to be done to protect anyone who chose to become a colonist on Mars from this ionizing radiation, which will kill you in very, very short order. I mean, hours sometimes, depending on your exposure and your suit and, you know, how they've figured out ways to protect you. You would be killed. So when you hear Elon Musk stirring up the crowd at his rallies about how he's going to build these devices that go to Mars and we set up a colony, folks, if you don't want to die, you're either going to have to live underground or under some kind of a special dome that protects you, because Mars is inhospitable to life.
Right.
So NASA going around looking for, you know, signs, and now every once in a while you'll get, look what we found, this is a sign of life, and then later on it's all debunked. That's all to gin up money for more expeditions to Mars. And especially talking about we need to send manned expedition to Mars. No, we don't. We can do the same thing with machines. We don't have to kill anybody and at a fraction of the cost. I don't mind exploration. I mind who pays for it, and I really mind the idea of sending people out to die. Yes, I know that NASA knows about this and that they would do something to protect people, but they also know that a permanent residence on Mars is all but impossible. You know, again, Barry, people apparently need something really bad to worry about with this Nibiru thing.
Mm-hmm.
I can remember people who, again, I like and respect, and who, you know, clients of mine who said, well, I guess it won't matter because we'll all be dead from Planet X. This was a few years ago. And after the date came, I, you know, just joshingly said, well, look, we're still here, and I don't see any rogue orbs in the sky that are coming in. And they're like, yeah, okay, well, some the ones who are realistic about it say, yeah, I got taken. The ones who are true believers will say, well, something happened, and it deflected for now, but it'll still be here.
Hmm.
And that's what you're seeing with Nibiru.
Oh, yeah, of course. There's nothing like true belief.
No, that's right.
Well, okay. But, you know, maybe some people are on to something, because maybe things are heading toward the cataclysmic end. I mean, obviously, if you're a politician of the stripe of, say, a Mitch McConnell, your world may be starting to come to an end. You may be feeling the shadow of Planet X coming to your way because, well, in Alabama, where they had to hold they have to hold an election to replace now Attorney General and former U.S. Senator from Alabama Jeff Sessions, the unthinkable happened. At least if you're Mitch McConnell, the unthinkable was that the appointee who took Jeff Sessions' seat, Luther Strange, who the Republican Senatorial Committee was backing to the hilt, and all of their PACs around them, and they've dumped millions of dollars in. Well, Tuesday was the election, the primary election, and, well, Luther Strange is heading to a runoff. But he's heading to a runoff in September in second place, because the man who beat him is none other than former Alabama Supreme Court Chief Justice Roy Moore,
yep,
the Ten Commandments judge. Now, Chuck, you know, just a statement of being clear on everything, you and I both know Roy.
Yes,
we've met him. We've talked to the man. We know him. I've corresponded with Judge Moore numerous occasions. He's a great human being. He's a godly man, and he's a statesman because he understands his worldview. He understands his biblical worldview and how it applies, and he is not reticent or shy or fearing man in applying it. Now, he doesn't do it in an arrogant way or in a belligerent way, as many people would try to have you believe. He does it quietly, but he does it in a way that leaves no doubt to the fact that he fears God more than he fears man.
Yes.
And so Judge Moore won the primary, but because no candidate, and it was a five-way race in this Senate primary, no candidate got 50%, then they have to have a runoff. And, of course, the top two vote-getters go to the runoff at the end of September, which is about 6 weeks from now. Luther Strange basically netted about almost 33% of the vote. I think it was like 32-point-something or other. Roy Moore netted over 39% of the vote when it comes right down to it. And then the third place was the sitting U.S. Congressman Mo Brooks, who was running as well to try to move up to the Senate. Mo Brooks came in with a little over 19% support. Now, what this means is that the incumbent, Luther Strange, is going to have a terribly hard time of winning. I've done this for a number of years,
yeah,
folks. Now, you've got a bunch of pundits and the political types who are basically bought and paid for by the National Republican Senatorial Committee, and you know, that's where their paycheck lies. They're poo-pooing, saying, well, Moore's completely capped out. There's nowhere else he can go. That's all the support he's ever going to get. But that's not really true.
No, it's not.
Because the electorate is a funny thing. Now, Mitch McConnell and the Senate committees and all of the special interest PACs around them are going to spend money like it's going out of style between now and the end of September in order to basically paint a picture for Alabama voters that Judge Roy Moore is going to, like, kick grandma out into the street and starve their children and turn Alabama into the nation's laughingstock because of his stance on both acknowledging God, of defending traditional marriage, of not supporting abortion on demand. They're going to try to paint him as this Neanderthal, out of accord, probably will even try to link him to the alt-right, Chuck. Now, I can see that coming, too.
Of course. No, that's a given.
Roy Moore represents something that people like Mitch McConnell fear the most. A man whose principles guide him without blinking. Which means he's not going to come to the U.S. Senate and just be a sycophantic little lapdog for leadership to vote whenever they need a vote, so that they could then they hand him the little treats, and those treats are, you know, plum committee assignments, or sticking them in front of the cameras with the national media on some issue, or putting them on the special committees, or, you know, the junkets, or directing a lot of these big money K Street PACs and others to write these nice healthy checks to their reelection campaigns. That isn't what they're going to get with Roy Moore, and Mitch McConnell knows it. And honestly, of anybody in the U.S. Senate, I mean, you can talk Ted Cruz, Mike Lee, Rand Paul. I mean, go down a very short list, sadly, but a list of all of these people who we consider to be staunch conservatives. These guys will look like compromisers next to Judge Moore. He will be the bane. He, as I put it the other day, he is going to be the Senate's Jim Jordan to McConnell's John Boehner. he will press so hard, and he will be doing it lovingly. He'll just stand up for what he believes in, and he'll basically talk straight talk. And they are really just not. I mean, you know, John McCain made his mark as the straight talk express when he was running for the presidency, and we know how far that got.
Yeah.
Both in his presidential aspirations and in the fact that he talks straight. He, you know, as we saw here recently. With his flip-flop on the overturning of Obamacare. But Moore is going to be a definite thorn in the side of the establishment. And that's the reason why they're going to try to savage him in the next 6 weeks.
Oh, that's absolutely what'll happen, yeah.
They spent millions before, but they had to split their attacks between Moore and Mo Brooks, because Brooks represented a significant problem for them, too. At least in keeping their handpicked guy, Luther Strange, staying in the seat. Well, I'm looking and crunching numbers. There is really very little chance that Luther Strange can pick up nearly 18% of the remaining vote.
No, because Brooks's votes will go to Moore, most likely.
Well, and I can't. You wouldn't say that categorically either.
No, but
what you basically assume is those votes are going to split maybe down the middle. Okay, let's just assume that, let's say 40% of Brooks's vote, which at 19%, that's about 8% of the vote is going to go to Strange. And about 8% of the vote will go to Judge Moore. Well, if you're sitting at 39%, 8% gets you to 47. So what do you have to do? You have to basically win the other 3% of the vote, and that either comes from that 3% of Brooks's votes, which may be uncommitted at this point until they get to that runoff election, or you're reaching down farther on the ticket to the two other also-rans who didn't make it, and their folks are coming over to you too. Moore's ability, but when you're Strange, even if you pick up 8%, you're setting at 41, and that means you've got to clear over 9% of the vote. That means you've got to pick up all 3% of those undecided. You've got to pick up everything below it, and if you think of numbers, 39 and 33, that's 72 plus 9, that's 91. There's only 9% of the vote left.
Yeah,
you got to pick it up. You've got to run the table if you're Luther Strange. You have to pick up every available vote you can pick up. Moore doesn't have to. He's got two different options. He could just pick up his 8%, which he's most likely going to get, plus that 3% from Brooks's base, or he can pick up that 8% and then go down and pick up the percentages of the other 9% that's setting out there. He has the path to being the next United States Senator, because it's Alabama. There are no Democrats don't win the U.S. Senate race. It's a Republican state. So whoever wins this runoff, they have to go in November and run against this Democrat, I think Doug Jones or something of that nature. But this is Roy Moore's. I mean, this is Roy Moore's race. And honestly, Mitch McConnell can't. I mean, this has got to be the nightmare scenario for Mitch McConnell. You know, you've already tried to bruise this guy. You know, he's sitting there with what you consider a bunch of baggage, but he's the hands down favorite. I mean, a sitting incumbent U.S. senator losing a primary by nearly 7% of the vote, Jeff.
Yeah, that's pretty bad. And okay, let's put it in political parlance. Roy Moore whipped him like a rented mule.
Well, yes.
It doesn't sound like much. 7 points. It's a whipping. It's a major whipping. And when you look at it, the anti strange vote. You take the Brooks 19% and add it to Moore's
the other
39%. The other 39%. People didn't like Luther Strange at all. No, they were sick of him. They were sick of the whole Mitch McConnell, the cabal that essentially runs roughshod in the Senate. That's what they're tired of.
Because when it gets right down to it, ladies and gentlemen, 67% of Alabama primary voters voted for anything that wasn't Luther Strange.
Exactly.
67%. He can't win, okay? He cannot win.
Yeah.
But Mitch McConnell, they will dump tens of millions of dollars into this race.
Oh,
just
yes.
Just like they did in Mississippi with the Thad Cochran race. Thad Cochran should not be the United States Senator right now, except they came in, and because they have an open primary in Mississippi, they recruited independents and Democrats to come over and vote for Thad Cochran in order to keep the conservative from winning. They don't have that luxury in Alabama. It's a closed primary state. Luther Strange is on his way out.
And that's
the question
bottom
is,
line.
How much money is Mitch McConnell going to sacrifice to basically make it respectable is what it gets right down to.
And that's exactly, they're fighting for respectability, not for the victory. Mitch McConnell has to be able to add. Unless they really think that they can do a complete character assassination on Moore between now and the runoff. And I forget when the runoff is.
The runoff is September, I think, the 26th.
Yeah.
If I remember the date. Now, I may be off on that day, but it's late September.
Yeah. And the beauty of having a late runoff like that is, and guys like McConnell and his minions coming out and doing all the character assassination stuff, it's all out of the way for the general.
Exactly. Basically, it's every nasty thing that could come out has come out, so the Democrats have nothing left, and if you've won and you won over 50% of the vote in the primary, you're probably going to win 50% in the general.
Exactly. Now, there will be some... let's bottom line it here.
Okay.
The bottom line is that McConnell would rather have a Democrat in that seat than to have Roy Moore in that seat.
Well, of course, but he'll never admit that.
Chuck. No, of course not.
That would be you know, stepping on the third rail for Mitch McConnell, so he's never going to admit that. But that really is what effectively is happening, you know, with the whole we are going to spend millions of dollars to try to keep our guy. Now, remember, Luther Strange has gotten in there, and I don't think if you looked at his voting record, if Mitch McConnell needs you to vote yes on this, he votes yes on it. If he needs you to vote no, he votes no. There's nothing to distinguish Luther Strange, and he's been there since April, since Trump
Sessions,
picked Jeff Sessions as Attorney General. He's been in there in the Senate and voting since April. He's voted along with the caucus leadership. Now, I don't know, Chuck, and you and I always talk about how the 17th Amendment needs to be repealed.
Yep.
Because if he was voting with the caucus leadership and it was hurting the state of Alabama, say, and not repealing Obamacare, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. The state or the legislature of the state could recall him and send him home and put somebody in there who's going to stand up for the state. But because we have the 17th Amendment and senators are elected now popularly, and they're really elected by the big money donors across the country who probably don't live in Alabama, you have got yourself a situation where they just follow what leadership tells them to do because that's what keeps the money flowing in.
Yeah. Exactly. We got to have that campaign money. It's all about campaign money. And it's all about keeping the coffers full so we can keep the campaign machine rolling, sadly. But it's also about protecting McConnell's globalist agenda. Let's not kid ourselves. The Senate is the place where treaties are ratified, where cabinet officials are ratified, where a number of things that essentially the 17th Amendment destroyed the entire fabric of how the federal government's supposed to work. The reason that, for instance, treaties were ratified in the Senate and that cabinet and other and judicial appointments were ratified in the Senate was for the reason that the senators were the representatives of the state government in the federal government. The 17th Amendment just ripped that particular fabric of the federalism to shreds. It just simply shredded it. There's nothing left. Do we need to go back to it? Yes, we do. Does it mean guys like Rob Portman would probably not be sitting, and Sherrod Brown would not be sitting in the United States Senate? The answer is yeah. Neither one of those two guys.
Yeah, probably most likely. Yeah.
Neither one of those two guys would have the job. And in fact, some of them would be called, most likely.
Yeah. When we talk, we talk quite a bit about federalism. We talk quite a bit about state sovereignty. We don't say states' rights because states don't have rights.
States don't have rights. They have sovereignty.
And we know full well that not always are you going to have a situation where getting back to a pure federalism and taking a lot of these things away from the federal government and restoring how our nation was structured and founded by our founding fathers through the Constitution and the documents they produced are going to lead to great outcomes because, well, let's just point to Oregon, for example. Just the same week as Roy Moore was winning his primary, the governor of Oregon, Kate Brown, who's a Democrat, signed a bill that basically would require insurance companies that do business in the state of Oregon to provide full coverage for abortion on demand. That means any type of abortion at any stage, and also to fund it for illegal immigrants. So basically, if you're going to do business as an insurer in the state of Oregon and get certified in the state of Oregon to be an insurance company that can, write policies, you have to provide full coverage, 100%, for abortions, regardless if a person is a legal resident or not. Or they can be an illegal immigrant and get coverage. It's just amazing, Chuck. I mean, this is just really incredible that they're doing this. Now, they basically believe that the law violates the pro-life opponents believe that the law violates the Weldon Amendment, which basically prohibits Health and Human Services funds for states that discriminate against health care providers that refuse to cover abortion. So this governor, wanting to make a political point, probably has signed a bill that will get overturned in the courts, possibly. Now, again, the Washington sits in the 9th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals, so that's a toss-up whether or not that's going to happen.
Yeah.
And of course, depending on how the courts want to handle the Weldon Amendment. Now, it's interesting because when it comes to a situation where a liberal progressive needs to have federalism on their side, the courts are happy to go there. But when it comes to conservative issues or policies where federalism should play preeminent, all of a sudden the courts become the biggest supporters of statism that you've ever seen. And I'm guessing that they'll rule on the side of federalism if this case comes up, and they'll say that the state of Oregon can't be bound by the federal Weldon Amendment. That they have the right to certify and decertify insurers within their state.
And
that's the problem we have.
That's right. And unfortunately, I would agree with them that they do have the right to do that. Now, here's the problem. The federal government has a duty to intercede when the rights of a certain class of human beings is at stake.
Right.
And what class of human beings is at stake?
The unborn.
The unborn. do the unborn have a right to be born? And the answer is, of course they do. I mean, look, this is not even a question. Not even really a question. When you put it in those terms, the pro-abortion squad immediately comes out and says, are you actually saying that the rights of the unborn outweigh the rights of the already living? And the answer is, it's not a question of it being outweighed. The question is, do they have the right to survive?
Correct.
Do they have the right to be born? And the answer is yes, and that right does. Now, are there situations, could we come up with a scenario where if a mother, doesn't lose a child, that she might die? Well, yeah, we could probably come up with one of those. And that's the red herring that gets thrown up. How often do those kind of things happen? Not very. And extremely small. And here are the facts. We have people that we've dealt with who are involved in obstetrics and gynecology who will tell us, who have told us, he says, when you do everything to save both mother and child dies because of the treatment you've had to give to get the mother to live, that is not an abortion. And it's not. An abortion is the wanton taking of a life. The fact that a child dies due to medical treatment given to the mother is not an abortion. It is an unfortunate consequence of the treatment that had to be given to the mother to keep her alive. That's where we are. If we don't understand the argument from that particular viewpoint, then the argument is lost. Because these are the facts. Now, this thing about you shouldn't have children because you're diabetic, and therefore an abortion is okay for you. No, it's not. Because there are treatments that you can get that will keep both you and the baby alive. So, should we terminate on the basis of something like diabetes? Well, I'm a diabetes sufferer. It's not fun. It's not fun having neuropathy, and it's not fun having sores and things that won't heal. It's not. It's tough. It's, you know, and people that are type 1 diabetics especially have it much worse. Blindness and all kinds of things. You know, blood pressure issues. Neuropathy that includes the inability to digest food anymore. That kind of thing. And not properly digest food anymore.
Well, Chuck, you know, you're absolutely right. Because, you know, what we have here in Oregon with this, you've got to cover abortions. What's going to happen if a state like Oregon, with a liberal, progressive, feminist Democrat like Kate Brown, decides that they're going to go the route of what Iceland is doing right now, which is we're going to eradicate Down syndrome by aborting every child that comes up with a diagnosis of it? That's the policy that Iceland is setting right now. You know, we've got situations in this country. You said, what if you have diabetes? What if you have a fetal abnormality like Down's or like Edwards syndrome or some of that? What about hydrocephaly or encephaly, which are, you know, usually not survivable? But, you know, I've had a friend, a pastor, and his wife who, when they were pregnant with one of their children, it was diagnosed with, I believe, with hydrocephaly. And, you know, they were pressured strongly to abort, yeah, and they chose not to. And they were able to, you know, welcome the child into the world, and the child wasn't going to live very long, but they were able to have that human connection with their child, and to treat it the child with dignity and respect, and then have a proper burial for the child, rather than have the child torn apart by forceps or burned to death by saline or have a catheter stuck in the back of its skull and have its brain sucked out in order to be removed, because that's how it's efficient for the abortionist to get rid of an unwanted pregnancy. So, folks, it's a question of where's our humanity? It's a question of where do you draw the bright line? Either we believe that we're all made in the image of God after his likeness, and therefore every life is precious, every life has dignity, worth, and value in the eyes of God, or none do. And so all of the fussing and fighting we have over ethnicity and color of skin and all these other things that we're seeing blow up in Charlottesville and other places. Frankly, if your ethic is that life doesn't have that meaning and value, then why should anybody care about those particular aspects of life? I mean, you really get into a situation where the absolute callousness toward life, the logical conclusion is you have no society anymore.
Let's talk about Iceland just for a second. Why this is so nefarious? It is. It's evil in Iceland. Here's why. First of all, they're bragging. They're beating their chests about how they've, quote unquote, all but eradicated Down syndrome, as if it was smallpox or polio or something along that line. It's not,
it's
folks.
Not.
It's not.
Yeah, absolutely.
Down syndrome is a random genetic mutation. What does that mean?
Exact emphasis on the word random.
Random. That means it can happen to anybody. This is not something you pass along to your offspring, the tendency towards it. It is a random mutation. In other words, what it is instead of at the moment of conception, instead of getting two copies, one copy from each parent of a DNA in the chromosomes, of which there are 23 pairs. So you get 23 pairs, one from each, 23 from a father, 23 from a mother. What happens is on number 18, chromosome number 18, you get three copies.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we have similar situation with things like trisomy 23, which is
21, which is Edwards syndrome.
Trisomy 23, right. Which is are some of these genetic anomalies that lead to strange sexuality situations. For instance, women who have triple X on number 23 get nothing. I mean, they don't notice anything at all. They never know they have this problem until they go to somebody might say, we need a genetic test for this. And they go, oh, you're trisomy 23, triple X. In other words, they can reproduce just fine. No problems whatsoever. However, trisomy 23, where there's a Y involved, all kinds of weird things can happen with XXY, XYY, XXYY, blah, 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 blah. All these different... but let's go back to trisomy 18, which is Down syndrome. It's completely random.
Down.
Just like any other trisomy or quatrosomy or polysomies, they're all completely random. What does that mean? That means you cannot eradicate them by simply killing the individual. You cannot eradicate that disease like you can eradicate smallpox and polio.
Eradicate
is evil on its face, because it's exactly what Hitler tried to do in Hitler's minions, his health, quote unquote, health professionals.
His final solution. Yes.
Hitler didn't just kill Jews and Slavs. He killed people who were, no other term for it, a quick term, mentally defective. Including people who were trisomy and genetic anomalies, again, random genetic mutations. The solution was they were a burden on society, kill them. And that's exactly what's happening in Iceland. Now, Sarah Palin's gotten in trouble for coming out and saying it's just like, you know, harkens back to Nazi Germany. She's right. It does harken back to Nazi Germany, but not just Nazi Germany. All kinds of totalitarian regimes that have based on eugenics. I mean, the Soviet Union fooled around with this stuff during the Stalin era. They said, we don't want to warehouse these people, and so they just kill them. Same thing with Germany. This is all based on eugenics, the idea that somehow we can, quote unquote, improve the race by eradicating certain characteristics from it. That's the most dangerous way of thinking. For crying out loud, Barry, God created man in his own image. Does that
Absolutely.
Mean are we perfect as we are as physical beings? No, we're not. Why?
No.
Because of the fall. The reason we have these issues to deal with is because of the fall. we have physical breakdowns and anomalies and random mutations because of the fall, because of evil in the world. Could God just step in and intervene? Yes, but that's not his plan. Part of our humanity is based on what we do with people who aren't as advantaged genetically as we are. And by that, I don't mean color of the skin. There is no advantage to one color of one skin or another. There is no advantage. It depends on where you live. The reason white people are white is because it was advantageous to their survival to be white, because they got more sun and made more vitamin D. The reason that black people are black is because they live in places where they're bombarded with more solar radiation, more direct solar radiation than northern whites are. So their skin, they have a built-in protection from the sun in their skin. You know, do black people still get skin cancer? Of course they do. Do they get it as often as white people? No. And I have, my wife is very fair. And, you know, she's a little worried because she's getting older and the doctor says, you're awfully moly, meaning that she has little growths on her skin. Well, that's because the sun, the direct sun, like we get here in Ohio a lot more than a lot of other places, is dangerous for her. And I have lots of fair-skinned daughters. I'm a little darker. My origins are more southern in Europe. But these are northern, at least two of my girls are very northern European looking. They're they're blonde and light-skinned. Liz and I are more, a little darker, slightly, although Liz is lighter than me. But again, there are no mental or behavioral or all this idea that race has something to do with the way you act is absurd on its face. God did not create superior and inferior intelligence in specific racial groups. He just didn't.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. You're absolutely right. But, you know, that's the problem with these type of things. That's the reason why I hope that cooler heads will prevail and there will be a repeal of this new Oregon law. And we won't, because, you know, you already have California and New York already mandate insurers cover abortions. But Oregon takes it a step further because they're saying taxpayer dollars also have to be used to cover the abortions for illegal immigrants.
Well, abortions, accordingly, essentially have to be free.
Right. Have to be free.
Free of charge.
It has to be covered.
Yeah.
Covered 100%. So, and there's no distinction either. It's basically, if you want an abortion for any reason whatsoever, you got it under their law. So that's a big problem. But you know what? Again, Chuck, I don't know where we are time-wise, but...
we got about 4 minutes left.
Well, there's not a lot of time to confront this, but... we'll start talking about this now, and we'll continue with next week's program, because we know this story is not going to end anytime soon. And that's, if anybody's been paying any attention, they know what's been happening here recently, or we think we know what's been happening with the unheaval, the unrest, and the tragedy that happened in Charlottesville, Virginia this last week. And of course the mainstream media and the left are making an uproar because they don't believe the president has sufficiently, expressed his displeasure at only one part of the equation. And of course, Trump, I believe, did the correct thing and basically signaling out that, whoa, there are a lot of people at fault here on both sides, on all sides,
on all sides,
not just both sides of the two protesting groups, but with the officials there who basically allowed it to get to a point where violence occurred and people lost their lives. Bravo to the president for coming out with his statement that he had. His first statement was just to, express his sympathy and condolences with the folks who were killed in the thing. And that wasn't good enough for that, because you didn't come out and specifically, blanket unilaterally condemn one side of the equation. And so, therefore, you're horrible, and we need to get rid of you and impeach you. And then he comes out Tuesday and basically said, You know, blame. There's a lot of blame to go around everybody in this. And as we're starting to see more footage and gearing more reports and digging in more, we're starting to understand that, you know, the president may have a point here.
I don't want to get too conspiratorial, especially with the small amount of time we have.
Sure.
And I think that we need to discuss this further on the next show.
We'll let you go fully conspiratorial in the next show.
It's becoming kind of obvious that considering the backgrounds of people involved, especially on the Unite the Right organizer, was actually an Occupy Wall Street organizer just 3 years ago and a Barack Obama supporter. Strike one. Strike two is the fact that there are two radicals in charge in Charlottesville, Virginia. The mayor and the vice mayor are radical Democrats. A permit was given that allowed access to a park, and then the permit was in the middle of a rally was canceled, and people were herded out of a park where the rally was allowed to be held. Were herded out of a park through what amounts to a gauntlet of anti-fascist protesters, and fights ensued. And then the state police came in, and the state police were involved in essentially ending this whole rally. So, and Terry McAuliffe is a well-known radical with ties to the Clintons and Obama. Terry McAuliffe is the former Clinton official who is the current governor of Virginia. And it's becoming obvious that the powers that be wanted a clash. And they wanted a clash that they could embarrass the conservative movement with. Now, I'm not in support of anyone who was involved in any of these protests. I frankly think a pox on both houses, and that's exactly where President Trump was. He's like, blame to go around for everybody. He's exactly right. Now, one place that was pro-Democratic, it's on YouTube, you can find it, has Trump's statement to that effect, saying he was taking a neutral stance. He was not taking a neutral stance. He was taking a third stance, which is where I am, which is that no one is not at fault.
Free of blame.
It's free of blame in this situation. This was designed to embarrass the right with these radicals. And let's face it, these guys are out there waving Nazi flags, and some of them, and all kinds of white power stuff. Forget that. They're just as bad as the guys who were doing the clenched fist communist salute and waving the hammer and sickle and Unite flags and all kinds of stuff on the other side. We're close to out of time, but you and I have both been talking to people who listen to our program outside the normal broadcast listening area, who listen on our podcast, www.principledpolicy.com. And one guy is from State College, Pennsylvania, and then you have people that have been listening in other states, West Virginia and other places. And my friend from State College, PA, who used to be my pastor when I lived in Michigan, came to me and he asked me if there's going to be a revolution or a civil war. And I said, yeah, there is. It's almost inevitable. The signs are there. It looks an awful lot like around 1856 here. If not, you know, people are being killed. This poor young woman who was at the rally and was run over by this guy in a car, although the circumstances around that are starting to get murky. So maybe we'll have more when we can record, we can tell people the full story, because the full story isn't out yet. We're now almost a week away from, you know, when we record this, and we don't have the full story.
No, so, and we probably won't. So, you know, stay tuned, folks. Next week, we're going to be talking more about this, explaining out some of the things that we're alluding to right now, and going more in depth on this particular story, because there's an awful lot more that you need to know, and to help you to put the puzzle pieces together and see what the real picture looks like.
Yeah, because there's a lot of hidden pieces right now. Well, that's it for today. We are out of time.
And everybody protect your eyes when you look at the eclipse on Monday. We want safety and we want everybody to be healthy. But we want you to enjoy that as well.
Yes. Make a pinhole camera if you really must. If you don't know how to do that, look on the internet. Okay. That being said, you know what we think. We want to know what you think. www.principledpolicy.com. That's principledpolicy.com. And join us again next week for another Principles and Policies.